This interview with Professor Peter Wilkinson is the first in a special series of interviews about the Square Kilometre Array. For the rest of the interviews and the full show, visit www.jodcast.net.
With me now is Professor Peter Wilkinson, who is Professor of Radio Astronomy, University of Manchester, and at the Jodrell Bank Observatory itself. Thanks very much for agreeing to talk to us.
Thank you, Nick. It's a pleasure to be on the Jodcast, which I've heard a lot about.
Can I ask you, how did the SKA concept come about?
Well, I'm pleased you asked me that question, since I was involved with it. Of course, that's the reason why you asked it me. It actually goes back almost, over 20 years now, to 1985. I was visiting what is still the world's largest interferometer array, the world's largest way of imaging the sky. It's called the Very Large Array in New Mexico. And I was hearing the latest results from a famous astronomer describing pictures of a galaxy taken in the line of hydrogen. It's a radio line, a radio spectral line, a particular wavelength, 21 centimeters wavelength. And you can look at the gas between the stars, a hydrogen gas, by observing this particular radio frequency. Problem is, as he showed me, that this line, this radio spectral line, is rather weak, because although there's a lot of hydrogen in the sky, hydrogen atoms sit for about a million years before they decide to emit one of these photons. So most of the time, one in every, whatever it is, 1,000 billion atoms, is only one of them is doing anything. And so the amount of signal you get, even from all this hydrogen between the stars, is quite low. So when you actually turn a telescope onto them, you can't actually see very much unless you sit and observe for long periods of time, maybe a whole day. And even then, you can't see much detail. So I was very impressed by what he showed me and said, great, fantastic, isn't this new? This is 20 years ago, remember? And I thought, well, if you really wanted to look at that galaxy with about the resolution that you can do in the optical, with an optical telescope in your back garden even, which is about one arc second, then the radio map was about 10 times worse resolution than that. So I thought, well, if it's 10 times worse resolution, that means 100 times in area, 100 more pixels, times more pixels you'd need. Well, if you need 100 times more pixels, then you need a telescope about 100 times bigger than this biggest telescope in the world. And if you work out on the back of an envelope, as I did as I was driving back home to the town where this telescope's controlled from, Socorro in New Mexico, with my wife, I said, well, that's about a square kilometre, you know. And I thought, that's a nice title, isn't it? I didn't actually call it a square kilometre array at the time. I thought about the hydrogen array. But that's how it started. It was basically saying, well, if you really want to image the hydrogen in the universe, then you better build something which is very much bigger than the biggest thing we have today. And about 20 years later, it looks like we're on the path to doing it.
So presumably there was a lot of work to go from the initial concept back in 1985 to where we are now, where we're starting to look at possible designs for the SKA and also where to put it. So what were the steps in between?
Well, of course, like many ideas, this was not unique. There were other people in other parts of the world, in India, in the Netherlands, thinking along similar lines, although I think they weren't quite thinking of a square kilometre. They were thinking of big telescopes. In 1991, there was a meeting in the USA, actually to celebrate the first 10 years of this very large array. And I gave a talk there, which actually talked about the hydrogen array and laid out that it should be of a certain type of instrument, which is broadly similar in some ways as to what's turned out. But really, then we started an international program of meetings that went all the way through the 1990s, toying with the ideas as to what would the science be other than hydrogen gas studies, and how you might make something like this. Because, you see, although we can actually make an interferometer a square kilometre in area, we know how to do it. If you decide to do it like, for example, the Very Large Array, it would probably cost 10 times more than we think we can afford. If you try to build an array based on the technology of the 1980s or 70s, which is the Very Large Array, it might cost 10 billion euros. We're not really certain, but something like that. And we should be able to build something around a square kilometre for perhaps 5 or 10 times less than that. So the progress we were trying to make was, what are all the other scientific areas that would break open if you had this large telescope? And then practically, how on earth could you make it 5 or 10 times cheaper than we know how to do it 10 years ago? So we had a series of meetings in the 1990s. Then in about 2000, we got really serious and we decided this has to be a fully international, fully global event. And we signed an international memorandum of agreement or understanding the General Assembly of the International Astronomical Union in Manchester in 2000, and we formed what's called the International SKA Steering Committee, ISSC. And that steering committee, which is perhaps 16 experienced astronomers from all over the world, has come together and steered the program. In 2002, we all agreed to fund an international director, which is Professor Scalizzi. And altogether, we've got we've given ourselves permission to talk about this project. But a few years ago, we started to get funding from all over the world. We started to get interest from the funding agencies, which recognised that the scientific potential of this array was so good that they were prepared to give us money for initial R&D studies. We're in that phase now, a very serious phase of technology proving how on earth can you make this thing perhaps 5 or 10 times cheaper. What are the clever ways of using electronics rather than steel, which doesn't get cheaper with time, electronics which does, which enable us to do a different type of telescope, a much more electronic telescope. So it's taken, nearly 15 years from a first serious discussion of what the SK might be to this period where we stand now on the threshold of getting permission to build it. And that will probably take at least another 5 years.
You mentioned the formation of a design team or a design group to figure out how to best make the instrument. And this was the SCEDS project, isn't it? The SKA design study. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, well, SCADS is just one, actually. It's the European effort. It's just one of the efforts that are coming together around the world to design a version of the SKA, because while we have a pretty clear picture that the SKA will consist of dishes of some sort, but we hope with also an electronic type of collector as well, SCADS is the European effort. There are efforts going on in South Africa, in Australia, and in the United States, but I think SCADS is the biggest, most coherent effort so far. That is a group of countries. There are 8 countries in Europe, with the UK and the Netherlands being the largest contributors, but France, Italy, Germany, Spain, Sweden a little bit, to come together to design an SKA concept and to design, in particular, and develop subsystems, technology subsystems, which drive the cost down. Because in the end, the SKA is a wonderful idea. It could do marvelous science, but unless you can drive the cost down, it will never get built. So what we're doing, to a large extent, is studying ways of producing electronic detectors and computing systems that are much cheaper than could have been done 10 years ago. And the European combined effort is indeed that, but it is not the only one in the world, far from it. The whole point about the SKA, it is a global effort. We're all trying to combine our efforts so as not to waste effort by doing things several times, but to see how we complement each other. I think we're doing very well at the moment. Europe, we're concentrating on these so-called phased arrays, large areas of little elements which don't move, but it all connects together electronically to form beams in the sky electronically, rather than the classical radio dish which moves around the sky mechanically. So it's the difference between an electronic system and a mechanical system. But the SKA will certainly contain mechanical systems as well. We think it'll contain both.
And what will be the University of Manchester's role in the SKA?
Well, of course, it's easy to get bogged down or concentrate on the technology to drive the cost down. It is very, very important. But first and foremost, of course, the SKA was conceived of as a science instrument. In Manchester, our leading push in the science area is the study of pulsars, the rotating neutron stars, the radio lighthouses that are the remnants of a star that's exploded and crushed all the atoms together in the middle to form one giant atomic nucleus, which we call a neutron star, which as it spins round, amazingly enough in certain circumstances, creates these beams of radio waves, which as they cross us, our line of sight, come as pulses. Now, those pulsars are fantastic tools for science. They're very complicated astrophysical systems. But under certain circumstances, you don't have to worry about the complicated astrophysics. You can just regard them as super clocks. Some of them are so stable, they're as stable as the most stable atomic clocks on the Earth, perhaps keeping time to 1 second in 3 million years. And Einstein would have loved this. If you find one of these stable clocks in an orbit around another compact object, it could be another neutron star, and we found those in a binary orbit. Or what we're hoping to find with the SKA is a neutron star pulsar in orbit around a black hole, which is probably an even heavier star which has gone supernova and crush the center down, not to a neutron star, but even further into a black hole, then you have a neutron star moving around a very, very intense gravitational field. Einstein told us, and it's been proven over and over again, that if you move a clock, which is a spinning neutron star, in and out of a gravitational field, the clock ticks change with time. In other words, the speed of the clock varies as to according to the strength of the gravitational field. The stronger the gravitational field, the slower the clock runs. And we're already finding, and Jodrell Bank has been involved with this for many years now, so far Einstein's general theory of relativity has been proven right at about the 1/20th of a percentage point, 0.05%. The predictions have been proven to be correct. But we know, for reasons we can't go into here, that in the end, general relativity must be found wanting. So one of the exciting areas of the SKA, as far as Manchester is concerned, is to find pulsar and a black hole. And we believe, we hope, although Einstein, and Einstein would forgive us, to test general relativity to destruction and to find out that in at the very great limit and great sensitivity, that the predictions of general relativity don't conform to what you actually see. And so we'll need the next generation theory after general relativity. But at the moment, general relativity has proven to be remarkably robust. So it'll have to be a remarkably strange and what we call a highly relativistic system to test it. It'll be the SKA, we think, which finds 20,000 new pulsars, one or two of which may be these very special systems, neutron stars going around black holes, that enable us to test general relativity to destruction.
Very exciting project and very interesting indeed. So will Manchester be taking part in the development of any of the technological aspects of the SKA?
Yes, we're very hopeful that we'll be playing a major role in development of these so-called phased arrays, where you don't have a piece of bent metal like in a classical parabolic dish, like an optical telescope or radio telescope, where a piece of bent reflecting material focuses the rays onto a point. You have to steer those around mechanically. If you have a flat plate of little collectors and you combine all the signals together electronically, then you can make a very flexible observing system that can generate beams or observing directions all over the sky, not just in one direction as you can from a single telescope. That's very exciting. What we hope to do is do it all with almost a giant computer. And if you have this giant piece of electronics connected together to all these little elements, you can scan the sky very fast. You can look for things going bang. It's the development of those phased arrays in great collaboration with our colleagues, particularly in the Netherlands, who have had this idea that phased arrays would be one of the ways to build the SKA for many, many years. And about 5 years ago, we decided we agreed with them completely. So together, we're trying to develop this technology. They're going down one particular route, which may be very fruitful. We're going a slightly different route, but basically we're agreeing that we're trying to develop the technology for this so-called flat panels of telescopes, the phased arrays, which will enable us to do observe the sky in completely different ways, observe large parts of the sky very, very quickly. And that's one of the advantages we hope for the SKA, that it will not only be much more sensitive than the sensitive telescope now, up till now, but it will also have very large field of view. You'll be able to scan a large area of the sky at the same time. That enables you to do surveys of the sky and find new things, because what we know is that the new things will be very rare, or they will require very, very careful, subtle surveys to look for subtle variations in the populations of galaxies or the timing of the events from pulsars. So the sensitivity of the SKA must be matched with survey speed, in other words, field of view, area of sky scanned, to generate these exciting discoveries which we hope it will produce.
So here's hoping that the SKA will rewrite the book on our understanding of general relativity. Very exciting project. Thank you very much indeed for taking the time to talk to us.
Okay, thanks so much, Nick. It's a pleasure to talk to the Jodcast.